KALW.
I said, we have a history of dyslexia. And they said, no, that wasn't the problem. That's when the fight began.
An African-American matriarch from Oakland fights for educational justice for the grandkids she's raising.
I'm sure if I had the resources, I could put him in a private school and he would get the help. But I can't get the help, and so you'd be a candidate for the state prison or whatever prison there is.
We'll hear how students are falling behind in school and a lack of resources they need to learn how to read. And a new novel follows the intersecting lives of two families, one Jewish, one Nicaraguan.
It's about displacement, revolution, and love.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Yesterday, we brought you a rundown on how California districts are doing when it comes to identifying and teaching kids with dyslexia. That's a learning disorder that affects the brain's ability to match letters with their shapes and sounds. It impacts reading, writing, and sometimes speech. Well, it turns out most districts still lag behind the science and the state's own dyslexia guidelines, and that failure weighs heavily on low-income kids of color. Today, KALW education reporter Lee Romney walks us through one African-American family's struggle for educational justice in Oakland.
As for stated, I am Geraldine Robinson, and I am a fighting grandmother.
Geraldine is a devout and joyful Christian who's now raising three of her grandchildren. She's been a relentless advocate for two of them in particular, and she says the stakes are high.
And I am fighting for their life.
On this fall evening in 2019, the crowd is celebrating the 40th anniversary of a disability rights nonprofit and honoring this Oakland matriarch. Her grandson and his younger sister showed early signs of dyslexia.
About 30 years ago, I had two sons that had dyslexia, so I knew some of the signs.
Dyslexia runs in families, so Geraldine talked to the kids' teachers.
I said, we have a history of dyslexia. And they said, no, that wasn't the problem. That's when the fight began.
Research points to effective ways to teach kids with dyslexia to read. The longer the wait, though, the longer it takes. But evaluations of Geraldine's grandkids never mentioned dyslexia. Instead, they assign the kids to a different special ed category.
Intellectually disabled.
That suggests a child is globally impaired. Low expectations often translate into fewer intensive resources to address underlying learning challenges, like dyslexia. Bias adds another twist. Nationwide, Black students are overrepresented in the category of intellectual disability, and some educators are more likely to punish Black students for falling short, even if it's clear the work is too hard for them.
My grandson, who didn't have a behavior problem, was never able to go on field trips. They wouldn't allow him because of his academics.
Tonight, though, Geraldine is feeling grateful because an advocate here at the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund taught her exactly which law to cite to fight for her grandson.
Which changed his life because he was able to go hang out with the rest of the kids.
The bigger news, a few months earlier, the Oakland Unified School District agreed to pay for intensive evaluations of both kids by an outside neuropsychologist.
So they were tested for dyslexia after 5 years of fighting.
As each year slipped by, Geraldine's grandkids fell further and further behind, and securing those independent evaluations wasn't the end of her fight. You'll hear more a bit later from Cheryl Thies, the education advocate who's been helping Geraldine. But she had something to say about the family that night that you should keep in mind as you follow their journey.
They're a perfect example of doing everything right and still getting nowhere. Because assumptions were made around the intersection of race and disability that these children were just low-ability children.
Geraldine doesn't want to further stigmatize the kids, so we're not naming them. And this story focuses mainly on her grandson, because as a Black boy, it's his future Geraldine fears for the most.
I'm sure if I had the resources, I could put him in a private school and he would get the help. But because I don't have the resources, I can't get the help. And so you'd be a candidate for the state prison or whatever prison there is.
Geraldine has had full custody of the kids for a while, but even when they were toddlers, they lived with her off and on. Her grandson showed red flags for dyslexia.
His letters was backwards or sideways or maybe even upside down. He would have such a hard time trying to distinguish what the word was. And even with his phonics, if I pointed out the phonics, he could say it. But then when we put it to the word, he could not exactly read the word with the phonics in there.
Geraldine read to him a lot.
The Dr. Seuss books.
And the Amelia Bedelia series.
She was a busybody.
Her grandson loved wrestling, so they brought home wrestling magazines, but
after a period of time, he wouldn't even look at the magazine because it was a struggle.
Outside of those frustrations, she says he was and is a gentle, caring kid.
If he has something, he wants everybody else to have it. He sometimes gives his away so somebody else could have it.
He's also a drummer. He started at 5 years old, and he now plays at the family's small East Oakland church.
And he almost just automatically knew how to do it. You know, he could keep a beat, you know, right off the bat.
And he's a whiz at building and repairing things. A little over a year ago, when he was 12,
a friend had bought a part for my car, and he couldn't figure out how to put it on. And he told my friend, move back. I got an idea. And he says, go get me some black tape. Grandma got some black tape. So he gets the black tape and he went in up under the hood and fixed it. And the car is still running with the way he fixed it. Just creative. You know, he can see something and create it. It's just the writing and the reading part he cannot do.
That bleeds into every school subject. Nationwide curriculum standards developed about a decade ago, for example, rely heavily on word problems to teach math.
And so you're just not doing a math problem. You're doing reading and math. He tries. He really does try, but it's a disability. And with the schools not accepting his disability the way it is, he have lost a lot of ground.
To be clear, the district didn't just abandon this boy to fail. Geraldine gave me permission to look at her grandson's records. They show he got speech therapy and was pulled out of general ed classes to get extra help. But none of it involved the type of reading instruction dyslexic learners need. Though his annual special ed documents were supposed to address his strengths, they mostly didn't. They did spell out ambitious goals for him year after year, but
they never achieved the goals. He's never achieved a goal.
The evaluations show that some teachers blamed him for his frustrations. One fifth grade teacher wrote, quote, he sulks a lot, is often angry, but will not talk about it. He rarely attempts any classwork. A seventh grade teacher said he, quote, sometimes can be very difficult when it comes to his work.
Most of his teachers say that he could do better, but he doesn't apply himself. And I said, it's not that he doesn't apply himself.
His dyslexia, she says,
makes it harder for him.
When dyslexia goes unrecognized and unremediated, experts say low self-esteem, depression, and anxiety almost always follow. Geraldine says that during her grandson's seventh grade year, he was sleeping so much, she had him evaluated for narcolepsy. That wasn't the problem. Just a week before we first meet in April 2019,
he came home with this headache and the shakes and the whole nine yards, where he's frustrated that he can't. And he's been like that the rest of the week, terrified and stressed.
Even as the years took a toll on her grandson, though, big things were happening in Sacramento, as this early 2016 ABC7 News report notes.
Well, there's a new law going into effect this year which acknowledges the learning disorder dyslexia in the education code.
Yeah, it will help children get access to special education and related services. You know, medical experts tell us that one in five children suffers from dyslexia.
The legislation called for experts to craft guidelines for California's public schools, spelling out best practices for teacher training, universal screening, and that type of curriculum dyslexic kids need, called structured literacy. But the guidelines aren't mandatory, and Oakland Unified has plenty of company when it comes to falling short with dyslexic learners. That statewide focus on this learning disability, though, likely helped Geraldine when in 2018...
I wrote a letter to the district and to the state.
It was a formal complaint, and the California Department of Education agreed OUSD had to assess Geraldine's grandson for dyslexia. They did. There was a problem, though. Here's Cheryl Thies, the education advocate we met at the beginning of the story.
The result of that evaluation was so poor, I mean, there is no other way to put it, and I say that as someone who has a lot of respect for people working at the school district level.
Evaluations are supposed to draw on parent and teacher interviews, class observation, and a variety of tests conducted by an educational psychologist. But a review of the district's evaluation, ordered by the state, shows it had none of that. Cheryl consulted a dyslexia expert who told her that the OUSD psychologist responsible
clearly had no training in dyslexia and how to evaluate and identify it.
Rather than turn to the state guidelines or other expert sources, Cheryl's consultant noticed the district psychologist had pulled her dyslexia definitions directly from two non-scientific websites.
It also pointed to the fact that she was cutting corners.
Geraldine confirms the psychologist conducted no new tests on her grandson. Instead, the paperwork shows she relied on his previous evaluations, and because those had determined Geraldine's grandson was intellectually disabled, she concluded, quote, he does not fit the profile of a student with dyslexia. Cheryl says assuming a child with intellectual disability cannot have dyslexia or benefit from dyslexia intervention
is factually incorrect. We know from the science that those two things are not mutually exclusive.
Plus, Geraldine had contested those very evaluations. So at the next meeting to discuss the boy's special ed plan,
I just looked at the program manager and said, we're asking for an independent evaluation. And they immediately said, yes, we'll fund an independent evaluation. But it begs the question, what parent who doesn't know that there's even such a thing as the right to challenge an assessment would just go, well, that didn't seem right, but I guess they're the experts.
OUSD officials declined to comment on specific student cases, citing privacy reasons. But in a statement, a spokesman wrote that the district, quote, is committed to providing explicit daily instruction in foundational literacy skills to students. Over the past year, he added, OUSD has taken steps to implement curriculum that meets the state's structured literacy guidelines for students in early grades and those in special ed who've been left behind. An early literacy screener will roll out next year. But literacy advocates and experts inside and outside the district say the process has been bumpy, teacher training inadequate, and implementation not far-reaching enough. As for Geraldine, last fall, she got the results of those outside evaluations of her grandkids.
Both of them had dyslexia.
Not just dyslexia. Both struggle with other learning differences. But the independent evaluator concluded neither child meets the criteria for intellectual disability. This past year has been better for them. They're at a different school where they've gotten access to speech-to-text and text-to-speech technology to help override their reading and writing difficulties. Geraldine's grandson is particularly transformed.
They put him in a place with kids of his same level, and he's good at math, and he was able to help other kids. By the end of school year, he had a little bit more self-confidence, self-worth.
An evaluation by his new special ed teacher 3 months ago said he'd made, quote, immense social, emotional, and academic progress. It called him an exceptional math student who always cooperates with his teacher and students alike. He's created recycling projects and presentations on natural disasters. His teacher happens to be among 170 special ed instructors who've received 10 hours of training on a new structured literacy curriculum. It's called Spire, and the evaluation said Geraldine's grandson was making his way through the very first level.
The school has really been working with them, but I've been fighting for this for 6 years.
That time lag matters. Her grandson just finished eighth grade at a third grade reading level. His younger sister is even farther behind. Just beginning to teach them the foundations of literacy at this age, experts say, will take skill and experience that will be difficult to convey in 10 hours of training. At a school board meeting last February, OUSD Superintendent Kyla Johnson-Trammell acknowledged,
"We know what to do from the research perspective."
The hitch? Finding the resources, especially now that COVID is decimating budgets, to make sure all teachers
have what they need to make sure that all of our students learn to read.
Soon, she added,
the NAACP is also going to be raising up what we need to be doing differently around addressing dyslexia.
The superintendent's comments followed a unanimous pledge by the board to work with Black and Latino families demanding literacy for all. A grassroots parent group launched the campaign to challenge generations of dismal reading scores and push for those literacy resources that all struggling readers need. So Geraldine's kids are far from alone. Kareem Weaver is a former Oakland educator who sits on the NAACP's Education Committee, and he's been pressing the district to comply with state dyslexia guidelines. For starters, he says, perceptions of educators need to change.
And that gap between expectations and student performance, that's the gap where assessment lies, where intervention lies, and where support lies. And so, unfortunately, many of our African-American students get lost in that gap.
Teaching those foundations of literacy that work for dyslexic students to all young learners is key to making sure more kids don't fall behind. Helping those who already are, like Geraldine's grandkids, is a greater challenge. But here's a surprise. The district was once known for a reading clinic that did just that.
We're taking kids from about 30 to 35 schools in the district. They're bused into us on a daily basis. We see the same kids for almost 2 hours every day.
Okay, here we go. Fitch to thick.
It opened in 2001, a district memo explains, and the goal was to save money. Parents were lawyering up because their struggling readers weren't making any progress, and OUSD was paying big bucks to send them to a private learning center that teaches a well-known structured literacy curriculum. So OUSD teamed with that center, which provided extensive training and mentoring to district literacy teachers who opened their own clinic at an Oakland school site. One parent whose daughter attended tells me it was their godsend.
They taught her how to sound out words. It taught her how to recognize the symbols.
Jean Townsend says it also taught her how to help her own daughter, who's now in college. Like Geraldine, Jean is African American, and she says she had to be the constant squeaky wheel to make sure her child would not be abandoned to fail. But she also made it clear she was prepared to sue the district, and she had the means to pay for medical tests and
for 2 years for her to have an educational therapist.
Geraldine doesn't have those resources and had never heard of the Oakland Reading Clinic. That may be because the district never flagged her grandkids for that kind of intensive reading remediation. 3 years ago, in the midst of a budget crisis, the district decentralized the clinic. The goal, the district spokesman said, to serve more kids without having to put them on buses. But several OUSD literacy experts tell me the intensity and scope of the clinic services have been in decline ever since. It's now on hold for at least the next school year due to COVID. For Geraldine, every week that passes without intensive help is cause for worry.
That's what I pray for every night, that a change will come, but I need some help for the change that will come.
To compensate Geraldine, state education officials ordered OUSD to provide 3 hours of one-on-one tutoring for her granddaughter. Geraldine says that tutor had no training in dyslexia. The state ordered 20 hours for her grandson, but OUSD has doubled that. Earlier this month, a tutor who received the district's 10-hour training in Spire began working with him remotely, starting over at level one. In Oakland, I'm Lee Romney for Cross Currents.
Lee Romney is KALW's education reporter, and that was part two of Lee's series on dyslexia. You can hear part one at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel their launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so we are bringing them to you in this series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear from Anne Ryoff, who lives in San Francisco. Her book is called Only the River. It came out in May.
This book is the story of two families, one Jewish refugees and the other Nicaraguan, whose lives intersect over the course of the 20th century and into the present. It's about displacement, revolution, and love. Put your hand in the river. It's warm. Can you smell it? Pepa said now. Yes, Liliana nodded, as she had done many times before as a child. Listen to the motor and the lapping of the water against the lancha. There on the right bank are some herons sunning themselves. Now you are coming around the bend. Soon you will see the Spanish fortress on top of the hill. It's so big the houses of the village look like toys in comparison. Look at the houses, all those colors. Ours is pink, but you can't see it from the river. Can you hear the falls? The lancha is approaching the dock now. There is Don Solano's shop, and there's the church. Don't take your hand out of the river, not until you're there, not until the lancha has pulled into the dock and the driver cuts the motor. Sleep, she said. You are safe now, Pippa whispered, as she did when they were children. Sleep.
That's San Francisco author Anne Ryoff reading from her book, Only the River. There's more local authors with new releases. Find them all at KALW.org/new arrivals. Today's Cross Currents team includes Vivian Basu Skinner, Sarah Lai Sterland, Lisa Morehouse, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Line producer is Kristen McCandless. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.